Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Our guest today is Jim Ryan, head football coach at Rhodes College. Jim Ryan completed his first season at Rhodes College, finishing 6-4 and putting the Wildcats back on a winning track. Previously, Ryan served as a defensive coordinator at Washington University, St. Louis for 4 years. He was recently named the NCAA Division III Assistant Coach of the Year by the American Football Coaches Association. Ryan was named Washington University's defensive coordinator in 2012 and helped lead the Bears to University Athletic Association titles in 2012, 13, and 15. Ryan's 2013 Bear defense ranked fifth nationally in scoring defense, giving up a stingy 11.5 points per game, and 19th nationally in total defense. Washington University played in the 2013 NCAA Division III National Playoffs. Coach Ryan also served as a defensive coordinator at Rhodes this past season and is very knowledgeable about the game. Coach Ryan, we're excited to have you on the Coaching Coordinator Show. Welcome.
Keith, thanks for having me. I appreciate being here and looking forward to spending the next few minutes with you.
Well, Coach, let's learn how you got your start in coaching and go all the way back to the beginning to what made you want to be a football coach.
You know, I think some point in high school as a player, some kind of switch turned on. I was around some really good mentors, and I felt like football had just in the short time I'd been playing, even in high school, had really been a benefit to me. And I knew that I wouldn't be an NFL football player or a Division I guy, and I just thought, you know what, I love football. I want to stay around it, and I want to have some way to affect people positively. And I grew up in Canyon City, Colorado, a little town about 2 hours south of Denver, and you know, small school, and was around some great people, and wanted to be able to affect people the way they did. And so that's really where it kind of clicked for me. And of course, I wasn't done playing. I finished my high school career. Was a very average high school football player. I went to Adams State College and played a year there, mostly on the scout team. And I'd had a detached retina as a high school senior, and finally the doctors wouldn't clear me anymore once they found out about that, and frankly it just wasn't worth the risk, and I really wasn't a very good scholarship football player. I probably would have loved to play Division III. I just didn't know anything about it then, and so I went back, transferred to what's now Colorado State University at Pueblo. At the time they didn't have football. They had dropped it back in the 80s, and I still wanted to stay involved in football somehow, and my old high school football coach, a guy named Lee Hitchcock, found out that I was interested in becoming a coach and offered me a spot as a volunteer on his staff. And that was back in 1995, and I started as a volunteer on the staff and spent 4 years on the staff at Canyon City, and worked my way up from a volunteer freshman coach to eventually a paid position, and just really loved coaching, and that's how I got my start. It's hard to believe. I think this is my 23rd season I just completed, and it's gone fast. But that was really where I got the start, way back when in Colorado.
Coach, what did you learn in those early years back with your high school?
You know, the guy I worked for, Lee Hitchcock, had been started to really become a legend about the time I started working for him. He'd been there for 20 years. He was a young guy when he started, and he could kind of learn with on-the-job training. You know, what I learned from him was really how to set up drills, how to run drills, how to teach, I think, was the biggest thing. He's a phenomenal teacher, and he took that to the field. And that was really probably the biggest thing I learned, was just how to instruct people and how to use repetition and how to set up your drills and how to be efficient with the way that you coach, the words that you use, things of that nature, really just the nuts and bolts of coaching. That was probably the single best thing I really got out of that experience, was just how to do that, and also how to relate to the kids, which was really good. But that was really the biggest thing I learned from him. And you know, he went on to win a state championship and is in the Colorado High School Coaches Hall of Fame. So I was really lucky to be around somebody like that. You know, and that's probably the thing in my career I've been so fortunate with some of the other coaches I've been around. around. It's almost a luck thing with some of the great people I've been fortunate enough to work with.
Coach, in your 23 years, what would you point to as other key things in your learning and development as a coach?
I went to Colorado College in 1999. I had a friend who was a player there, and it was the only Division III school that had football in the Mountain Time Zone. They've since dropped it, but that was a key experience for me as a part-time coach working at Colorado College, and that was my first exposure as a college coach. And our program was not very successful. I think I learned a lot of things both to do and not to do. I was around some good coaches there, but that was a big change, just getting into the college game and just the amount of hours and work and, you know, everything from two-a-days on through the season, just the fact that there really was no break, no time off, and I loved it. I mean, it was a great introduction for me to the college game, and I just had a blast doing that. From there, I went to Fort Lewis College, a Division II school in Southwest Colorado. I was a defensive line coach, and that was another great experience for me, because there I did everything you could possibly do within a program, from being the video coordinator to being the equipment manager for the entire college, to spending summers up in the hills cutting fire breaks to make money so that I could somehow survive and live on the $3,000 a year stipend that I was getting paid. And it was just a great kind of trial by fire for me to go through so many different things. I was the defensive line coach there, and I just learned a lot about the different aspects of a college team. And sometimes those experiences have still been the best things that I've come back to in helping me, be a head coach, is, just having to be the equipment guy and do the laundry, be the guy who actually had to stuff the stuff in the machines and everything. And you come from home from the road game and it's 3 a.m. and you've got those white jerseys that are caked in mud, and you don't just go to bed. You got to get those things soaking so they don't become ruined. And, those are the things that still come back to me today that, are important. The little lessons that I learned. So that was a key point. And then really the next big jump, I did have a couple other positions as a graduate assistant at Delta State in North Alabama. And, Delta State had won a national championship the year before, and it was really cool to be around a program. They were number one team in the country at the time, and just how they did things, and to see a program that had resources and so many other things that some of the other programs I'd been around lacked. And then working in North Alabama to see, it's about as big time as Division II can get in Florence, Alabama. Being around Mark Hudspeth, who was regional coach of the year, and Steve Campbell at Delta State, who was a national coach of the year. Both those guys really just taught me a lot of different things about motivation. I thought that was something I learned in the South, was those guys could motivate people and recruiting and those sorts of things. So I really got exposed to a whole different culture of football down South during my graduate assistant years at Delta State in North Alabama, and it was just a great experience. And then I went to Colorado College in 2001 or 2002 as a defensive coordinator, in as a full-time salaried coach. That was a whole different level. And my first time coordinating, I had a chance to learn so much from my own mistakes and some successes. We were 1-8. We were a horrible football team, and I had so much fun though working with the players, and really found that was my niche. Being a Division III coach was where I wanted to be, having been at Division II in high school. Division III was it, and I knew then, even though we weren't very good, that I could still have fun and enjoy coaching and working with kids, and that's really where I said, okay, this is where I'm going to sink my teeth, and I plan on staying there till I retired as a defensive coordinator. It's like 30 minutes from home. Mm-hmm. Now, how cool would that have been? And then they fired us. We went 1-8, and they got rid of us, and so I'm sitting there trying to find a job. I was an insurance salesman for a day. Mm-hmm. I walked in and they said, okay, write down 25 names of people you know. And it's like, I can't do this. I can't be a sales guy. So I somehow lucked into a job at Illinois College as a defensive coordinator in 2003, working for Aaron Keene, who's now at Eastern Michigan as a special teams coordinator, and had a blast. I worked there for 5 years and really, again, another chance for me to be around Division III football in the Midwest. Again, another culture, another area, small school, 1,000 students, and just had a blast doing that. But really, probably the biggest change was in 2008. Larry Kinbaum hired me at Wash U. in St. Louis, and I spent 8 years with him, and that was probably the best on-the-job training for becoming a head coach that you can get. You know, Larry's won 200-plus games, and just the lessons I learned from him over those 8 years were phenomenal. And really, really, when I walked into this job here at Rhodes, I felt like I had a clue. And as a head coach, as a first-time head coach, that's probably farther ahead than a lot of guys feel like they're coming into this job with that kind of knowledge or that level of experience. And I still, you know, there's still things I screw up every day, but that 8 years with Larry was tremendous because he really taught me how to run a program, and that was just the best on-job training I could have had for this job. So I've been a lot of places, obviously, yeah. But they all really helped me, every day when I have things to tackle here as the head coach here at Rhodes.
Well, Coach, over that time, obviously, you've had some great influences, and you start to develop a philosophy, and it evolves over time. I think you keep tweaking it. What's that philosophy evolved into for you as far as running a program?
I've been probably both ends of the spectrum. You always hear the term players coach. And, you know, those are the guys that, you know, the players relate to, and they feel like the guy's an advocate for them. And I'd like to think that's the type of coach I've become. I was not that type of coach 10 years ago. I was the yeller and the screamer and those sorts of things. And really our philosophy here at Rhodes, when I came here, I came here with the idea that I wanted to build a program that would be a family for our guys and that would develop them as men and really get out of the aspirations to just win football games. That's not the most important thing for us here at Rhodes College. I believe that if we do things the right way with our guys going to class and acting the right way when we go on the road and those sorts of things, when we do all the little things right, I really believe the wins will come and the success will. And so that's really what I've tried to keep my focus on as a head coach and really impart to the players. It's like, it's great to win, but let's take care of this other stuff first. And when we do that, then we're going to be very, very successful. And so I've really tried to keep my head out of, you know, let's try to win as many games as possible and be more into, you know, how can we help our guys become better people? And that's really what our program is about here. I want to have the best program in the country. And I don't want one person to ever look at our program and judge it by how many games we won. I want them to judge it by what we've accomplished with our guys and what they're able to do when they go out in the world. And that's something I think I learned a lot from Larry Kinbaum at Wash U was I don't think Larry ever talked about, you know, he always wanted to have a top 10 program, but it was never about, you know, just how many games he won. It was about the things that we did and the way that our guys handled themselves. And that was really the best lesson I've learned. If you do the little things right, your program's going to take off. And I really believe that's going to happen for us here.
Obviously, Coach, in building that family, you start to focus on things that become a culture, really, that become ingrained in your guys. So what specific things are you doing within your program to build that culture?
You know, I think the main thing is the very things I talked about, you know, with you know, going to class and behaving the right way and you know, when we go out, you know, and interact with people. It's not just saying that one time in your fall meeting and you say, okay, this is what we want, and then you never come back to it. It's really reiterating that over and over, and I don't want to use the word beating it into our guys' heads, but it is a little bit just continually talking about, you know, hey guys, make sure you're sitting in the front row of class, make sure you're getting to your classes, make sure you're taking care of business with this and that. And I think it's just that constant reinforcement that's what we want, that those are our expectations. You know, there's a saying in coaching, you get what you emphasize, and our staff, I think, does a great job of making sure that we're talking to our guys about doing the little things right. So I think that's really the big thing. Our theme this year is a slight edge. It was a slight edge. I'll probably have a different theme for next year. It's a book I read by, I think, Jeff Olson's the author, but it was really about making sure that we, you know, do the things daily that need to be done to be successful. successful. You know, we can talk about being successful. We can talk about winning. We can talk about all sorts of things, but we have to do certain things to make sure that that happens. You know, whether it's in the workouts that that we have in the weight room, it's what kind of results we're doing. What are we producing? And that's really what I want our guys to be. And I talk about this with our staff. I want them to be producers, not talkers. And when we start producing, great workouts, and we start producing great practices, and our guys are producing in the classroom, which they did this year. Those are the things that I think over time, it adds up. The little things add up into becoming big things. And that was really, for this year, that was a program philosophy. And that's always going to be part of what we are, is we've got to take care of the little things daily and continually focus on those and make sure that we're producing, not just talking about what we want to do. I can talk about us winning games all we want, but we have to find ways to produce that in recruiting. That's crucial for our staff. You know, we have to make sure that we're bringing kids on campus and that we're finding ways to produce daily. And that's really kind of become the nuts and bolts for us this year. And you know, that way the distractions don't affect you as much. You just take care of the things you need to take care of daily. And I think that's been a big part of what success we've had so far.
Coach, you mentioned putting the emphasis on taking action on it. You know, there needs to be activity behind those things. Is there anything specific you could point to, something unique, a team activity or maybe a specific strategy that your coaches use throughout the year that you point to as, you know, kind of key in developing that culture this year?
I don't know if it's anything specific as much as it is just a cultural thing, you know, as far as, you know, with our practices, making sure that, you know, for instance, you know, turnovers, you know, that's a part of our practice.
Right.
We have a segment called Win the Turnover Margin, and we're going to spend 5 minutes a day, defense finding ways to cause turnovers and offense finding ways not to give them up. And I think, you know, again, when they're, and we had other issues at times that crop up as they do with football teams. I think every football team develops its own personality and their own little, intricacies and whatnot. And so, you know, being able to go through and first of all, identify those things and be realistic with what are we having issues with. And we did have an issue with turnovers in the red zone this year. That was a big problem for us about midway through the year that we identified. And it's being honest enough to say, this is an issue. How do we take care of it? And not just saying, well, you know, coach, we're doing everything we can. How can we reinvent ourselves enough to say that's not going to be a problem? We're going to finding ways to practice those situations. So I think there is, you know, if we do one thing well as a staff, I think we look at what we're bad at times and say, well, let's go fix that and not just try to, you know, bury our heads in the sand. And so the turnover thing was, at one point, it was really big for us where we're, you know, I told our guys, let's pull up every red zone turnover and let's look at it. Let's see what's causing those things to happen. And a lot of it was, missed exchanges with the quarterback or, you know, the quarterback just pressing and making a throw. And what was cool is our last game of the year, our quarterback who had, you know, he had a number of questionable throws down in the red zone. You know, I remember he's scrambling around because he's a runner and I see him just sail one out of bounds. And it's like, there we go. We're starting to get it. You know, our guys are starting to understand. That's a game we end up winning in overtime where, you know, I think we kicked a field goal on that drive and it was huge for us to get points. So I think being able to identify the things that maybe you're struggling with at the time and being realistic with yourself, I think that's real important because sometimes you just say, well, that's not really our problem or, you know, our kids just have to be better. Well, what are you doing to make them better? And that's something that we really as a staff, I think, try to go out and focus on each week because football teams evolve and change, and I think you have to understand that.
Coach, I know you've worked hard as a defensive coordinator up to this point where you became a head coach. What's the philosophy of your defense and what type of defense do you run?
Well, our defensive philosophy is really our team philosophy. The number one goal of our program here at Rhodes is to stop the run. And I really believe that if you can stop the run, and our definition of that is 100 yards in a game. If we can hold our opponent to under 100 yards in a game rushing, I feel like we've stopped the run. I don't care if they run the wing tee or if they run the spread and throw it 85 times. That's our goal, 100 yards throughout the course of the game. So our defense is always going to be built for that. The defense that I've run here has been a 4-2-5, and I really feel like in our conference is very spread oriented. People like to throw the ball all over the place, but the, you know, they also have been inventive with getting into some of the two back formations to you know some of the Auburn stuff you see with using that second back and just inserting them in different places to give you headaches. And I really feel like with the 4-2-5, it gives us the ability to load the box when needed. If the offense has formations where they can stack folks in there, we can answer in kind. And then at the same time, if they're going to spread us out, we have the people on the field that can match up with those guys. I've been a 4-2-5 guy for most of my career. There was been some 3-3 that sprung in there when I was hired at Colorado College. I was hired because I had some knowledge of that defense. But really, the 4-2-5 to me is still, I like the idea of four down linemen. I think it's the best way to stop the run. And so that's really what we've kind of hung our hat on in my time at Wash U and Illinois College when I was a defensive coordinator and then here at Rhodes. So that's kind of been our niche.
Coach, let's think about game planning a little bit here and getting into the specifics of your defense. What starts out your approach as far as how you want a game plan? Obviously, it's going to be focused on stopping the run, but what types of things do you look for?
You know, I think the process that I've gone through is, first of all, I like to just on Sunday night, I really don't like the game plan before the game. I don't like break film down before we finish the previous game. I feel like sometimes the two things converge too much from the previous team and the new team. So, you know, after we get done with our Sunday meetings, you know, I just sit there and I watch the last three games and I just watch the games. I watch the whole thing. I want to see everything. Why did they do what they do? Because I think teams sometimes on offense, they do things because they can do them or they do things because they have to do them. And I like to try to at least get a sense of why are they running the certain plays that they're running? You know, is it because they were behind or those sorts of things? You know, too often we get caught up in the cut-ups. So I like to just watch the game to kind of get an idea of what are they trying to accomplish in offense? What are they hanging their hat on? And just to get a feel for it, you know, the staff did a great job. They would break the film down for me and put all the information in and those sorts of things so that, you know, come Monday morning, that's when I'd start to sort through, you know, just plays and watch plays. What plays are they running? What are they having the most success with? And especially watch plays against defenses like us, because I do think some coordinators are going to, you know, play a three-man front much differently than a four-man front. In fact, most of them probably do. So just trying to find, you know, what are they like against defenses like us? What are they like against everything? And just getting that feel. And I've always been a big feel guy as a defensive coordinator. And so, you know, once we get through that, then I also like to look at, you know, I'm a big efficiency guy. You know, efficiency to me is on first down, are they getting 3 or more yards? Are they getting half of what they need on second down? And are they converting on third or fourth? If they do any of those things, they're efficient. So that's part of our breakdown, is to look at that. And I like to see what are they efficient with? Like, what plays actually work for them? And, you know, because sometimes, and I even do this defensively, I'm running defenses that just aren't very effective. And I have to go through and look at that sometimes and make sure that I'm running the things that really are working. And I look at efficiency as a big marker of that. So that's the other thing, is what plays are efficient, and then what formations are they running, and what's going to give us trouble in our base defense. And once I start to identify what gives us trouble in our base defense, then you start thinking about, okay, how can we adjust to that within our scheme without having to come up with new stuff? I really don't like to have lots of checks in, you know, the defense of the week. I'd rather, you know, be able to relate it to our kids and say, this is like X or Y or Z that we already do as much as we can. I'm not a huge check two guy. Mm-hmm. And then identifying there may be situations where we do feel like we need a check to for whatever reason. They put formation in a boundary or whatever it might be. But really, you know, once we start to identify the formations, then it's about the special stuff. Do they like to put formation in the boundary? What are, you know, what are they trying to accomplish with just some of the different things that are breaking their typical tendencies and then moving forward? And then we sit down as a staff Monday afternoon and we just start to look at all this. And the cool thing is we really don't talk much until then. So we all have different ideas, and then I kind of pull the staff and it's like, okay, what are you guys seeing? And hopefully we're seeing the same things, and we can start to build our game plan. Like, how are we going to stop play X, Y, or Z? What's going to be our best answer for that? And you know, we'll throw everything up on the board that we think, you know, we're going to want to see, you know, see as far as the different pressures we want to run. How do we want to line up to all the top formations? And I really try to keep our focus on the top stuff that they do. I want to stop the top five runs, the top top five formations, the top five passes, and then let's make sure that nothing else can kill us. You know, make sure that they don't have something else beyond that. And so as we go through the game plan, we'll put all that stuff up, and then we try to chop away what we don't need. You know, we try to really justify keeping, you know, do we need to have this check here or whatever? And I want to eliminate as many of those extraneous things as we can to keep our scheme simple. And really it comes down to, you know, what are they good at? How can we stop it? And then, you know, the quarterback, I think, is the other thing we've started to look at more recently. What are the quarterbacks able to do? You know, can he make the different types of throws? And I've really started to break down hit charts on where those guys are actually completing footballs. And that's key, I think, because there are so many quarterbacks who can't make certain throws. And when you can eliminate parts of the field and how you cover things, that really helps out in being able to handle the defense. So that's kind of the broad overview of how we do it. But, you know, I think what's cool is, you know, I let the staff have input into things that they like. And they'll sometimes come up with some awesome ideas that I haven't even thought of that we can try to incorporate. And I think as long as we're keeping things as close to our base as we can, you know, I feel pretty good about it. I've just been burned too many times when you start coming up with a certain defense mm-hmm. that's really out of your structure.
Right.
Sometimes those things can be awesome, but what I found is if you run a defense outside of your base against a specific opponent, it's great until they break it. And then you don't know how to fix what's not your base. When it's your base defense, you know how to fix when it breaks. You know, right. With the 4-2-5 and our base stuff, if a play pops, I instantly know probably what happened and probably how to fix it. But when you get so many checks in there, that's where you really get into trouble because you can't visualize where the breakdown may be.
Yeah, and I find your process to be interesting as well, because I've been kind of on both types of staffs where we all sat in the same room, we all watched the same film, and we all kind of talk through the same ideas at the same time, which can be productive. But I've also done it in the way where we looked at it separately and then came together like you guys do. And I feel like everybody bringing their different perspectives in maybe is a little bit more productive, while you don't sit there and work through the same things and see the same things necessarily at the same time. I think bringing those different ideas in, I think it does two things. One, I found a little bit more in terms of buy-in from the coaches, because everybody's, you know, making sure they're doing their work on their own and not, I guess, relying on other people in the room to do it. And yeah. Number two, you get some really good ideas that way.
Yeah, and I think, you know, especially in our staff's a little bit young, and the thing I always worry about is you know, if we all sit in a room together and I start saying we should do this and that, you know, I'm the head coach, I'm the defensive coordinator, and the thing I always worry about is those guys will just they'll say, yeah, coach, that's a great idea, mm-hmm. you know, and they'll probably buy into it because it's, you know, I'm not going to come up with anything too off the wall, but at the same time, you know, I don't want it to be homogenized. I want their ideas, and you know, Chris DeLello, our D-line coach, you know, he's been an offensive guy in his past, and you know, he's come up with some great stuff. Ron Booker, who coached our defensive backs this year, did a great job of, you know, just being able to innovate and come up with some different things that I wouldn't have ever thought of. And you know, especially because we haven't worked together that long, and so that's part of you know sometimes that's tough when you haven't worked together much because you're still figuring each other's strengths and weaknesses out. But the cool thing is they all had different experiences, and they came up with some ideas I would have never thought of that you know, I think were really helpful for us.
Well, Coach, let's take things out onto the practice field now. And really, some of it's done in the classroom. But what are some of the best things that you and your staff do to teach your players the understanding they need to be successful on game day?
Well, I think the thing I always try to get back to simplicity, and it starts in, you know, in camp when we start thinking, when I start putting together the installation progression as to what we're going to put in when. I've always been a big believer of we're going to be able to do what we can practice. I really don't want to get into things that we can't practice and rep. So when I install the defense in fall camp, we only install what we have time for. So I go through and I plan a practice and I look at what we're going to install and say, do we actually have time to put in these blitzes, these line movements and whatever it may be. You only have so many minutes within the whole framework of your fall camp. Because in an academic institution like this, where you know our practices are going to be 2 hours long, I really believe whatever we get in by the end of fall camp, that's the defense. I really can't start adding a whole bunch of stuff after because we just never have time to rep it. You know, I believe you have to watch it on film. You have to see it on the board first. You have to watch it on film, and you have to find a way to rep it on the field. And you know, once we get through fall camp, those 13, 14 practices, if it's not in, we can't do it. It's just so tough. So part of everything that we work through when we get to the field, we have 2 hours. And that's our practices start at 4:30, and they finish at 6:30. There's no time before or after other than some meetings and everything. We have a walkthrough that we'll start with to begin every practice. And really what I walk through is anything that could be, like we have a blitz pickup script. We'll walk through that whole script against all the different types of looks that we can see as much as possible, just so that our guys can see that on the field. Obviously, we'll have some tweaks throughout the season. So any tweaks or anything we do differently, that's where we want to be able to see that in a walkthrough situation. I want them to be able to walk through it before we just teach it on the board. And we go out and, all of a sudden we're in a blitz pickup period and we've never even walked through it. And I'm asking guys to run blitzes that they haven't even done in real life. So we try to walk through it first before we ever get there. And again, if I can't walk through it, if we can't get it done in that 10-minute walkthrough period, then it doesn't go on the script. I don't want to practice anything that I can't walk through. And I certainly don't want to run anything in a game that we couldn't practice, in our period. So that walkthrough period is really critical for us to be able to cover it. And that's the same with any adjustments, not just blitzes. It's just different adjustments. If we get to this formation, we're going to line up this way. We have to be able to accomplish that for that particular day in 10 minutes, and that's it. If we can't get it done, we can't get it done, and then it's off the script. So once we get done with that walkthrough, through individual, we'll try to make sure that we're working techniques that have to do with block destruction, tackling, pursuit. Those are things we're always going to take care of in our practice. And then finally, the fourth thing is anything scheme specific. If we're doing something a little bit different, being able to rep it, whether it's a blitz or whatever it might be, and getting that's where we'll do our group time, and we'll bring people together and work that. We typically have about 20 minutes of individual. So at some point, we have to work on turnovers. At some point, we have to work on block destruction. At some point, we have to tackle every day. That might leave us 5, maybe 10 minutes if I can get creative with finding ways to do different, week-specific stuff. So again, you can see I don't like to do a lot of brand new stuff throughout right. the week because I just don't think we have time to, without sacrificing time with those other skills that we're always going to work on week mm-hmm. in and week out.
Coach, let's think about some situational football here. And looking back on this season, what was a critical situation you faced? Could be a third down, might be something in the red zone, or just a particular play where you felt, okay, we need to get a stop here. What was that situation, and what was your strategy for approaching it?
Well, we had a game against Hendricks, who was they came in with one loss and awful good offense, great All American running back and a quarterback who is phenomenal. Traded scores all day, just went back and forth, and so I don't know, it's 55-54, I think. We're up by one. We just caused a turnover. They had come down, almost scored. We knocked the ball out when they tried to poke the ball over the goal line. We recover at the 2-inch line. Offensive coordinator Pete Jennings runs up to me and says, Can I throw a fade right now on first down? And I was like, yeah, go ahead. So Pete calls a fade. Our kid hits it. And so we at least get out of jail, but we end up having a punt. We couldn't do anything else. We end up having a punt. Hendricks recovers at gets the ball their own 45 with a minute left, no timeouts. And they start driving down, which they've done all day. I mean, we have not stopped them yet. And they get down to about the 20-yard line. And I think it was third down with like 15 seconds left on third down. And it's one of those situations they had struggled with their field goal team. And I think they wanted to see if they could just get a little bit closer to kick the field goal. And And so I had been playing soft. I'd just been playing a four-man rush, nothing creative. Just you know, what I didn't want to do is give up a home run, because they had receivers that if we got caught in man coverage would get to us. And I really thought, you know, the best thing I can do is get to zone pressure and send our best blitzing linebacker, Duke Sherrell, who is, you know, just a fast as blazes linebacker. And I wanted to blitz from the boundary just in case they wanted to throw like a 5-yard hitch to the boundary or something. At least we'd have somebody in the quarterback's face. So that was kind of my rationale. If we bring it from the boundary, if he's going to throw like the 5-yard outer hitch, because with no timeouts, they can't complete anything in bounds without having to hurry up and go to stop the clock. And I wanted zone coverage behind it. So I ran a 5-man pressure, and I wanted to cross off the tackle. So we had our end rush up the field, and the idea was for Duke to come underneath. And sometimes you find out that your players, you know, they do things that drive you nuts. And Duke did one of those things that drove me nuts, where he's supposed to come underneath and he doesn't, and he continues to rush outside the tackle. But the cool thing was, he was so fast beating the tackle around the edge, and our end actually occupied the tackle, so he couldn't pick Duke up. So we got a 2-on-1. The back was nowhere to be found, because the back's probably not looking for that type of pressure, because that's just not what we do. Duke sacks the quarterback, and he ends up fumbling, and we recovered to win the game. But the zone pressure was, you know, at that point in time, with our team's identity, that was really what we were hanging our hat on. And we played a cover three behind it, just with the idea, you know, if they're going to complete something, let's at least make sure that it's underneath, and we're not going to give up the home run, because that was just the type of team they were, and their quarterback just held it a little bit too long, and Duke was able to beat the kid around the edge. And again, one of those things, when I look at the tape, you know, I thought I called a great pressure, right? And I did I called this great exchange pressure, and Duke must have come underneath the tackle and just blown the kid up. Well, the back would have picked him up, as we looked at film later. Duke just continued to run around the tackle and make the play. So sometimes our players do things that, while they drive us nuts, it was an awesome football play, and it was huge. I mean, it was a huge win for our program. So, but that was one particular thing in mind, and for our team this year, zone pressure was our best pressure answer. You know, we just weren't great at man coverage, and I think that was kind of what we started to hang our hat on.
Coach, how do you prepare for those situations in practice?
Well, you know, we run 2-minute drill a ton, and I try to throw out different situations, and make sure that our offense is preparing as well to get the ball down the field in a short amount of time, and we try to make it as realistic as possible too. So, we also do a blitz pickup period where, you know, I try to throw every blitz known to man at the offense, and they have to pick it up. That's another situation I think is good, even though it's not specific to who we're playing. I think it's good for our offense to have the kitchen sink thrown at them and to have to work under pressure and those sorts of things. But the 2-minute stuff, you know, we do that at least once a week, where we're going to have some type of, and I change the situation, and you know sometimes it's a 4-minute situation, and we've just got to find a way to get a stop. But I like to have some type of end of game or end of half situation that we're working weekly for our guys to have to find a way to get done. We make it competitive. If we get it, we get our stop or whatever it might be. We'll have our guys, have to clean the field if they lose or whatever it might be. We do that a ton with third down situations as well, where we'll set up different third down, 3rd and 3. 3rd and 5, 3rd and 7, and it's a best of 7 between the offense and the defense, and just try to make it competitive as much as possible. And I think that putting that competition in practice, where our guys are, it's not just a period they're getting through; they know that there's something on the line. That's something I think really helps us, when it comes to some of those game situations.
Coach, let's switch things up here and put the focus on you and some of the lessons in your learning as a coach as you have come up through the ranks. So let's go back to the beginning. What's a mistake you made as a young coach, and what did you learn from it?
I think the biggest mistake I made as a young coach would be when something went wrong with the play, it would be to, blame the player first. Yeah, it's his fault he didn't get it done. As I've matured, I've realized, I'm not teaching it right. If he's not doing what I want, I'm the one teaching him. I'm the one coaching him. I need to find a way to teach him right. And if for some reason he can't do it, then get the next guy in. But, I need to teach better. That's really what I've started to develop more as I've gotten older, rather than just always pointing the finger at the player and saying, that guy didn't get it done, it's on him anymore. And I tell our staff this too, and sometimes young coaches tend to do that, where they want to blame the players more than they should, and it's like, no, blame yourself first, and then you can start looking at personnel and those sorts of things.
What's the best coaching advice you received in your career?
You know, I think one of the best things that I was told is kind of along those same lines is you know, there are players who are phenomenally talented, and it always seems like sometimes those are the guys that you have the biggest issues with off the field or whatever it might be. And somebody once told me it's better to coddle a thoroughbred than whip a mule. And the saying is, you can get rid of the really good player that is giving you some off the field troubles, but you're going to have issues with, trying to get those other guys to just do some of the things that guy will never be able to do. And honestly, the question I always ask myself is, with a player that's maybe you're having some off the field issues with, is there a better way, for us to work with him to make him see the vision of what we're trying to get done here? And I think more often than not, you'll find that you can get those players to fall into line. They need you to mentor them. They need you to know that you care about them. And they need to have a plan. And a lot of them don't have that. And that has happened at every place that I've been. So being able to help those players out, and that goes for even the non-talented players that become issues. It's sometimes I look at our program as probably better for them than they are for us. But you know what? I want that guy to be successful too. So I just think being able to find a way to be inclusive rather than exclusive. And so many coaches are quick to kick people off their team and whatnot. And I'm not saying that could never happen here, but I'd rather find a way to keep them around and keep them as a positive influence with what we're trying to do. So that's really the best advice, is just trying to be inclusive more than anything, and know that you have some good players. You recruit your butt off to get these guys here, right? Why would you kick somebody off that you worked so hard to get here? Find a way to keep them around.
Mm-hmm. Coach, what advice would you give to that young guy just getting into the profession and looking to do it long term?
You know, there's so many guys that want to do this. And when you go to the national convention, you see everybody out there looking for the next best job or whatever it might be, or guys just looking for jobs in general. And I just think the number one thing is to have persistence and patience. If you want to be a college football coach, it can happen, but you have to be persistent and you have to be able to stay with it. Now, not everybody can. I mean, there are personal situations. You have a kid or two and you're married, and there comes a reality that hits for everybody, and if you're in that situation, then it is what it is. But if there's any way that you can find a way to stick around the business, eventually your day will come, and who knows at what level or what you'll be doing. But I just think if you can find a way to stick it out and find a way to make it happen, but it's not always on your timeline. It rarely is. It's usually just one of those things you have to spend years and years waiting for that shot. And but that would be my best advice, because I've seen so many good coaches get out of it. Maybe a little bit early, because they get frustrated with a certain situation or where they're at, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. Sometimes those guys are better off being in a different profession. But if there's any way you can stick it out, that's really the best advice I can give.
What's a book you've learned from that you'd recommend to our listeners?
You know, the one I read, last year right before I got this job was The Slight Edge by Jeff Olson. And really what makes that book impactful for me is that it lets you, it's kind of like instructions for what to do with all the other like management type books that you read. I've been a big Jim Collins guy, Good to Great and Great by Choice and all those. But what The Slight Edge is about is really not giving you any of the advice that those books give, other than just to give you the plan and how to implement it. Basically, the premise behind the whole thing is you are what you do, and what you do daily defines you. So You know, I went through a phase, you know, a couple years ago, I lost 60 pounds. I was tired of being 240 pounds. I just didn't feel like that was where I needed to be. And, you know, just because I didn't want to be 240 pounds doesn't mean the weight just falls off you. I had to do something about it. I had to eat less and I had to work out more. I mean, and that sounds very simplistic, but you know, that book was huge for me at the time because it's like, okay, every day I've got to take care of, you know, checking the box, making sure that I'm doing what I needed to do to lose that weight. And, you know, and in 3 months I lose all that weight and I feel so much better. I'm so much more prepared to be a head coach. And, you know, there's so many things in my life changed. And, you know, it wasn't, you know, that book taught me how to lose weight or anything. What it taught me to do was, you know, every day I had to concentrate on, you know, what's my goal and how am I going to implement that daily. And that's what I tried to impart with our guys when I got here, is it's not about, you know, there's no workout that's going to, you know, gain 50 pounds on your max and make you ready for the season. It's the 50 or 60 or 90 or however many workouts you get to do between now and the start of the season. It's doing those things daily. That's what's going to get you to your goal. And that's what I really liked about that book. I thought it was just a great book about how to implement things.
Coach, what's a specific thing you've learned at a coaching clinic and implemented into what you do?
You know, one of the cool things, you know, I used to run the secondary clinic at WashU. It was a really good clinic that had been started years before by Ron Collins, and I resurrected it when I was a defensive coordinator there. And my last year there, I had Greg Williams in to speak. He was still with the Rams, and I'd gotten to know him a little bit. And he spoke about some cover two zone pressure stuff that he was doing. Now, the way he was doing it was pretty wild. He had like nose tackles dropping out to cover the flat and that kind of stuff. But it really helped kind of shape some of the things we did this year. We did a lot of cover two zone pressure, which was new for me. But one of the things I found is we were bringing, you know, America's Blitz, where you're bringing two off the edge and you're long sticking people across the center and those sorts of things. Is so many teams were getting to like sprint out and play action passes to the flat. And it's so tough in that cover three under three deep. It's tough to cover anything to the flat if you can't get the quarterback contained off your initial pressure. And the cover two zone pressure stuff was really pretty cool because it gave us a way to give a hard corner out there and we're blitzing off the edge. So if the quarterback wants to throw the quick out, we've got a corner sitting on that right away. And so, you know, kind of learning that from Greg Williams and tweaking it to what worked for us was pretty cool because that kind of became a staple of ours this year in our pressure package. So it was actually a pretty good adaptation for us.
Coach, what's something you want to learn about this next offseason here?
You know, one of the things we struggled with was, I think our man coverage can be better. So I want to learn more about, you know, just becoming a better man coverage football team. I really believe that, you know, the teams that have the ability at times to bring six, and cover, you know, with no free safety, I think you have an advantage when you have the ability to do that. And, I just see so few teams that really will dial up and bring heavy pressure at times. And I think you have to have that ability, to do that. So just the technique side is what I'd like to be able to concentrate on with that.
Technology is becoming a big part of the game. What's a piece of technology that's your favorite or maybe something new you'd like to incorporate into what you do?
You know, huddle's been big for us. It's hard to believe how much easier things are and how much we take that for granted. One of the things we did last year was we incorporated a the Sidewinder camera that you see at the conventions and everything. Yep. That's like $3,000. We didn't have $3,000. So I put together a system with a painter pole and an adapter and a $250 camera that your iPhone can act as the viewfinder for. And we put together that system and we use that thing constantly in practice to, you know, whether it's interior drill or to move behind the offense. And it gives you so much better shot than your fixed end zone pole or whatever they have behind you. And sometimes we'll put that on the other side of the offense. So we actually get, both butt shots in the, mm-hmm. in the field, when we're doing our stuff, which I find invaluable just to be able to see that stuff. So that was one thing. It was like a $300 camera that you know normally would be $3,500. So that's one big thing in technology that I think has helped us. Other than that, it's just kind of amazing how far things have gone, and the fact that we can break film down in so many different ways, but using different camera angles, I think is kind of the next step. And we haven't done anything with helmet cameras or anything like that. There's only so many hours in the day, but just having those different views and being able to do so on the cheap has been really, really good for us.
I'm gonna tell you right now, Coach, the drone, that's the best view you could get.
We thought about that, and we're really close to a major airport, so that's one concern. Those planes fly pretty low over our space, but that would be the next step is to look into that. I've thought about that quite a bit. So, do you guys ever use one in practice?
We had our SID brought one out, and the view was really good. And I also have some coaches. I was interested in it and wrote an article about it. So I asked some coaches to send me some film, and it is the best view you could get. We used to, when I was at BW, we used to practice at the Browns facility, and essentially we'd get that same kind of view from way up in the rafters where they had their camera bays, and we'd send our guys up there. And they would basically be almost right down on the play, and with that you really only need one angle. So I was talking with Ian Shoemaker at Central Washington, and they bought like a $300 Phantom drone, and really had a cost savings because they no longer needed that extra film, or they just used that one view. So they found a way to
really
save some money with it too. Yes.
Interesting. Well, I might have to look at, because they're coming down in price too. So I might have to look into doing that.
Yeah, he told me they bought theirs on Amazon. So I'll try to find
really?
You a link.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. Awesome.
Coach, obviously you work very hard at this game, which a lot of guys do. What do you do to create balance between the profession and your personal life?
It's hard. Just especially when you wear that hat as a head coach, you take on a different level of responsibility. You're never done. You're never truly off. There's always something, email or phone call to answer. I try to do my best to make sure that we have balance with our hours and those sorts of things. We also make sure that I'm not big into grinding. I'm not big into our guys being up here till 8 or 9 at night. I like to take my kids to school in the morning. I make sure that as many times during the week as I can, even in the season, I'm going to take my kids to the bus stop or to school. Does it sacrifice some time I could probably spend game planning? Absolutely. But I just think making sure that I have interaction with them besides an hour at night when I get home is important, where they see me more than once a day and they see me for more than an hour a day, even if it's for a short time in the morning. I just think those are important things. And whenever my staff has things that come up, I want them to take care of their family stuff first. And that's really important to me. That's something that most of the guys I work for have understood, and I want our guys to be able to do that too. I just think it's a short amount of time that your kids are young, and I want them to be able to spend some quality time with them. I want our practices and those sorts of things to be friendly to families and kids and those sorts of things too. And I think when that comes from me, that really helps. So that's the main thing, and then just making sure that I. Put the phone down and the computer down at night and spend some good quality time with my kids, get them to bed and help with that. That's really important. And it makes me stay up late. And a lot of times I don't get a lot of sleep, but I'd rather sacrifice some football time, so that they have good memories of me at this age. Mm-hmm. That's so much more important to me.
Yeah,
so I'd rather be remembered as a good dad than a great football coach when it's all said and done.
That's the important thing.
Yeah.
Coach, what are your major concerns for the game right now? What ideas do you have that can address those concerns?
Concussions. I think concussions they're not going away. In the youth football market, I know I hear rumblings that, there are issues in some communities with turnout, whether it's youth football or high school football, because of the concussion issue. I never want to downplay that. I never want to say, well, it's being overblown. I don't think that that's fair because we simply, there's a lot we don't know. I also do believe that you can get a concussion doing just about anything. And I've had players walk into my office and say, Coach, I'm not doing this anymore. I don't want any more concussions. And I always tell them, well, you know, you could trip on the sidewalk walking out of here and get one. You know that. And, you know, obviously a collision sport like football, you're going to be exposed. My hope is that we continue to evolve tackling technique. I think what Pete Carroll did with the Hawk tackling thing is awesome. And I think as much as coaches, we can continue to research technique and equipment and just making sure that we have, you know, the proper concussion protocols in place and that we abide by what those trainers and doctors say. I think that's huge. And I think we have to continue to recognize how important this issue is for us.
Definitely.
So, you know, I really believe that, you know, as long as we continue to work at it as coaches, we don't try to sweep it under the rug or minimize it. We recognize it for what it is. That's going to help parents come to terms with the fact that, yeah, you can get them anywhere, and we're doing everything we can in football to minimize them. I still think the benefits of football outweigh the risk to concussions when we're doing everything we can in our power to prevent them. But, you know, we still have to continue to work at that with equipment and those sorts of things.
Yeah, you know, Coach, what's been nice in doing these interviews and talking to coaches is almost every coach brings that up at some point in the conversation. And I really feel that that is absolutely true, that we are doing everything we can to minimize that and take care of it. And I've said from the beginning when people, you know, started posting articles about this, et cetera, you know, I'd said on social media that coaches are the ones that are going to solve this. And I think we're doing our best right now, doing a great job in trying to make a difference. And I do think you're right. Parents can be a little bit more at ease because of the initiative we're taking to get it corrected.
Well, and when a parent asks me here, a parent of a recruit, which is as often, I feel like I have some really good answers about how we handle them with our training room and the protocols that they've developed. I think our people are on the cutting edge with what we're doing here for preventing some of the negative effects of concussions. And so I feel pretty good about giving them answers. I feel good. I sleep well at night knowing that we're doing everything in our power. And I feel like we're keeping our kids as safe as possible. And I think as long as we're doing that, you know, then we're going to be in good shape. But at some point, it's a risk in every sport, and it's not just a football problem. And I think that's the number one thing that sports need to recognize. It's not just us. Soccer, lacrosse, everything, there could be issues, and I think we all have to recognize that.
Definitely. Coach, we're going to speed things up and do our two-minute drill here. Questions on some football topics, so quick ones here. Schematically, what's the toughest offense to face?
Tempo. Fast tempo is tough.
What's your favorite goal line defense?
You know, I like to get man and bring pressure. I don't like them to have time to figure out what they want to do.
Turf or grass?
Turf.
What's your favorite coverage structure?
Favorite coverage structure is a robber coverage.
Day game or night game?
Love a night game.
If you had to run your defense from one front, what would it be?
Four-man front.
What's your favorite quote?
One of my old high school coaches used to say this all the time, and it always resonates with me. You act like, you move toward, and you become what you think about.
Should the kickoff be eliminated from the game?
No. Again, I think we can continue to make football safe. And how do you onside kick if there's no kickoff?
Exactly. If you could pick one coach from the past, either retired or no longer with us, to learn from, who would it be?
Bill Walsh.
How about one from the present?
Bill Belichick.
How many teams should be included in the FBS playoff?
I think we should include 64, and then we'll only have half the complaining we have right now.
All things being equal, Coach, blitz or play your base?
Blitz.
Bringing pressure. Coach, nice job with the two-minute drill here. Here's the final question. What's the one thing you'd point to as giving your team the winning edge?
You know, when we have recruiting events and you know, especially a year ago, I'd sit stand up there and try to convince people to come here, and I hadn't won a football game as a head coach. Well, now I've won a grand total of six, and so we, you know, there are so many other head coaches out there who won more games and have much more experience as a head coach than I do. But I think if you look at our staff overall, you know, Pete Jennings, our offensive coordinator, has just done a phenomenal job here. He really turned our offense around from the cellar into phenomenal offense. Our offensive line coach, Brad Linares, is a great, tremendous teacher. I just hired a new defensive coordinator, Brian Vaughn, who will be starting. He started actually just a couple weeks ago. Phenomenal defensive coordinator with a lot of great experience. Chris DeLell, our defensive line coach, is phenomenal. And Ron Booker, our secondary coach, has done a great job. And that's a pretty good full-time staff. And I would put that full-time staff up against anybody in the country when it comes to just an overall staff and the ability to teach and those sorts of things. So that's really what I think gives us the edge, is just a phenomenal staff.
Coach, how do our listeners connect with you?
Twitter, Coach J. Ryan on Twitter. You can email me at ryanj@rhodes, rhodes.edu. Those are probably the two best areas to connect with me. And then, yeah, just so you know, we're hosting an offensive line clinic on March 3rd here at Rhodes.
Okay.
Great clinic venue. So that information will be going out through Twitter and whatnot soon. So we're really excited to have that going as well.
Coach, I really appreciate you taking the time and talking some ball here with you. I look forward to seeing you at the convention if you're going to be there, and I definitely look forward to seeing some great things from Rhodes.
Keith, I appreciate the time, and thank you so much, and good luck with everything. But I appreciate you taking the time to visit with us.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.